Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Operating a University Music Therapy Clinic During COVID-19 and features Chris Millett in an interview with Erin Sheena.
Hello, I'm Erin Sheena, the editorial assistant for the Imagine magazine. I'd love to welcome Chris Millett. Thank you so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast.
Thanks, Erin. Glad to be chatting with a friend on a Friday. This is great.
Absolutely. So over the past year, the COVID-19 global pandemic has required us to be flexible and adjust how we work, to say the least, right? Adjusting how we work with young children and their families. And so in this year's Imagine podcast series, we'd like to explore how your work with young children and their families has directly or indirectly changed as a result of the pandemic, and kind of hear about what you've learned and the experiences that you've had. Preparing for you to kind of enlighten us on what you've learned in this journey. We've got 10 questions for you. So ready to go?
Let's rock and roll.
All right. So the first question that I have for you is, where do you work and what's your role?
Sure. I am the coordinator of the University of Louisville Music Therapy Clinic. So we're a fully kind of operational clinic housed inside of the university. So we blur the line between being like academic, because we do a lot of student practicum training. We have internship site, and I teach one class right now, but mostly we kind of operate as a almost like a private practice embedded within the school. So we're mostly seeing individuals, small groups, facilities, and right now that looks like a pretty big hybrid of telehealth and Zoom-based services, as well as other types of hybrid services. Zoom as a backup, you know, if somebody's not feeling well or there was a positive COVID test, so kind of in the middle. And then we are doing some things live with COVID restrictions. We're seeing some people in the clinic, and we're seeing some facilities and a couple of individuals in their homes. We don't really have any one specific specialty. So we have early childhood individuals, we have early childhood groups, which I know a lot of these people listening would be interested in, but we also serve a lot of teens and young adults and adults with special needs. We serve several different types of facilities, senior living, adult day program for special needs. We work at two different group foster homes with specifically teenage boys. And I'm sure I'm leaving a couple of other places off there, but we do all kinds of stuff. And we have quite a bit of our facilities are back online, if you will, but we lost quite a few facilities as well, which was a big hit to our bottom line for a while. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot of that kind of covers our next question, about what types of services you offer to young children and their families. Any other details you'd like to share?
Sure. So this year through grant funding, we've been able to launch a infant and caregiver developmental, kind of like that Music Together, Mommy and Me style class. Mm-hmm. We did it as a partnership with U of L Health, the NICU. They were able to fund some families joining, as well as using some of our Crusade for Children grant. So that is specifically young child and family focused. And then we work with a few individuals and some in person. That has actually been quite a challenge for lots of reasons. We have a lot of kind of strict COVID restrictions with the university. So mm-hmm. People not wearing masks is not really an option for on-site. And we've seen some people off-site in their homes, but it's really limited a lot of our work with young children.
So how have your services changed due to the pandemic and kind of moving everything and figuring it out as we go?
I had to be more transactional with some things, which that was kind of like the bummer. But the interesting thing is it allowed us to do more things that, like, we have a couple of people that really, it's cool now because their dad had to go and work in South Carolina and do some on-site work for some other company. I don't know. But what was cool is instead of not seeing that person for 3 weeks when they went to South Carolina with their dad, we saw them on telehealth for three more weeks and they did great. We have some people that like are just doing amazing. Mm-hmm. Some people that it just didn't work for and some that have done fine. And it's been kind of like good to do something rather than nothing. So we've kind of had all the different responses of individuals, groups. I was super surprised how well a lot of groups have gone. And it was really cool to see how, adaptation wise, a lot of populations and groups of people with that are differently abled have been using technology assistively and augmentatively. I don't know if that's a proper conjugation, but they've been using it to enhance their life and to interact with things and to get things that they need for a long time. So it's interesting now walking into some of their spaces and seeing like, wow, you're better than me at all of this stuff. Like I'm the rookie in this. So,
so with that said, what kind of adjustments have your young clients and their families had to make within this whole experience?
I would say the hardest part for any of our, especially our young, we call them clinic artists, our young clinic artists, or some of our artists that have, just basically any kind of significant attention issues, which as a child, some of those are just developmental. Like I can't expect you to do that. A lot of breakdown has happened when we expect people to do things that are just beyond developmental level, whether that is match with their chronological age or not. The problem is like, well, you stick an iPad in front of them. I can't be as interactive. I can't come through the screen and, tap their shoulder. It's also in COVID. So even in person, I can't tap their shoulder and things right now, but there are limitations to the level of prompts and the level and the way I would use, body language and things like that. Like I can be as animated as possible, but it can only go so far because it's a two-dimensional screen. So we've had lots of people that without significant family involvement, which they're trying to work during the day. They're trying to adjust to their life being transitioned to, Zoom meetings. It was hard to work. We had a handful of young children that it was really hard to do that just because it wasn't going to work with the family lifestyle the way it had to be also adjusted during COVID. So that's been a huge challenge. I'm excited for the long-term ability to do these kind of things, whether that means working with people from wherever, and what does that mean for, do we need a universal license I'm going to work with this person from Georgia. I need to apply for that licensure, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be cool to open up those options. I think people aren't afraid of that now. And I think the option, like I said, of like someone goes on vacation, we can keep doing therapy. Someone's not feeling 100%, we can do telehealth. And just knowing that that's an option in like the rescheduling and things like that, it's a lot better than like, oh, no session this week. So that's been pretty cool. And we have a handful of people that are pretty hybrid of that now. So,
yeah. Well, that kind of touches on our next question about how you see telepractice changing, changing itself, and then also kind of changing the future of service provision, even as we kind of move back into the world as we more normally know it.
Sure. I think in lots of ways, I would say music therapy wasn't totally caught off guard. I think a lot of people, Dr. Kern, for example, has been talking about this for a long time. This is not new. This is how she teaches everything. Mm-hmm. So we all were aware that these things were possible. And I think, you know, music therapists are scrappy, you know, they adapt quickly. So I think ironically, some of the technology was not quite as ready for a lot of the, like, because I literally get to the point where I'm like, why can't I do that? Why doesn't that exist yet? So I think I'm hopeful that some of the technology will exist or will be accessible enough. You know, maybe it does exist, but it's expensive. And that's always the case with technology. It always gets cheaper over time. So, I mean, latency to me would be the big barrier that I would love to be able to do things with zero or super low latency, mm-hmm. so that making music over the internet simultaneously could be better.
So what are your hopes for the future of your service delivery, for the future of the clinic, as it relates to telepractice and in general?
Yeah. I think we kind of hinted at it earlier. I think my big hope is that when telehealth and telepractice becomes an option rather than a necessity, I think that will be really cool for the doors that it opens up. We're not afraid of it. Like, we can do stuff with it now. So I think knowing that we can integrate, people are a lot cooler with integrating technology now. Even if that means we're in person and we're using a computer or we're using a device or whatever we're using, it's a lot less like, ooh, shiny. Like, cause I think part of the thing before was you brought in something and it was automatically like, oh, their attention's never going to be off of that. Now I think it's more of a tool that is not inherently so distracting, so that you really can use tech a little bit more comfortably. So I think that's cool. Collaboration, cost saving for things like, you know, these different conferences and things. Conferences in person like serve a purpose, and I hope they come back and don't go away forever, but options of doing things and symposiums and things like that are also super cool, that now everybody's got a little taste of like, I could do a training. I could take a lesson from somebody. I'm a lot more open to, you know, myself getting online supervision.
Yeah. Are there any specific resources that have been really helpful to you in the last year?
Sure. Staying on top of Zoom's updates has been super helpful. Zoom has been so on top of trying to keep the capacity going, and so much has improved over a year with the audio quality. Mm-hmm. So that's been super helpful. Just Googling Zoom audio for musicians, you can find quick settings that you can change. So that's been helpful. I'm a part of the Tech Nook. That's super helpful. I would tell any, not just music therapists, but educators or whatever, it's all about using music in therapy or in classrooms. So the whole point is looking at the technology of creating, editing, interacting. So there's podcast stuff, there's telehealth stuff, there's music production, there's all this different stuff. So that's technook.co, I believe. I have already used Canva for everything for my whole life, but Canva has been the best for creating everything. Especially a lot of like interactive worksheets and, you know, musical Mad Libs and, creating things, presentations, songs for the infant and caregiver class. We've done mixing it up to try and keep it stimulating. So some visuals, some in-person things, some movement. I think those would be probably my top three for sure though.
Yeah. Those sound great. I want to look at them.
For sure. For sure.
All right. Well, our last question, are there any words of encouragement or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, geez. As far as telepractice goes, like, don't be afraid of trying something. That's kind of my motto in general. It's like, don't be afraid of giving it a shot. And my only word of wisdom that I always try to share with people, you know, I'm an Enneagram type 9. So I'm always like, don't take yourself so seriously is, I saw a great bumper sticker that said, don't take yourself so seriously. No one else does. I was like, ow. But really though, like, you're probably more worked up about whatever it is than your clients, than your students, than whoever. Like, just take a breath, make a mistake, fail. And you'll either learn a new way to do it or say, I won't do that again. So, you know, cause I've done plenty of things on Zoom that I was like, maybe I won't try that again next time. It's brand new territory. We couldn't have known some of these things. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man. Well, we all sure have learned a lot this year, haven't we?
Whether we'd like to or not.
Right.
We didn't have a lot of choices.
Right. Well, man. Well, I feel like I've also learned quite a bit just from talking to you this last little bit. And I so appreciate you taking the time to talk with me and sharing your insights.
Absolutely. Anything for you and Petra and the whole crew.
Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2021.